everyone, and welcome to Lunchtime Topics. My name is Caitlin Lance, and I work here at the Creative Coast in Savannah, Georgia, as the Director of Programs and Communications. Lunchtime Topics is one of our educational programs. It happens twice per month, and we bring on a business expert who shares their wisdom with Savannah's startup and innovative community, small business community. And it's an opportunity for, you know, we've had marketing experts, we've had franchise owner experts, we've had leadership experts. And today's topic, it's the first time we've done this, and I'm so excited. I can't believe we haven't done this sooner. We're going to be talking about how to sell your business. And so again, I want to just reiterate for people just tuning in, this is an interactive event. So if you're tuning in live and have questions that are relevant to what I'm asking, please pop them in the chat and then I'll ask Brian any kind of lingering questions or questions I didn't get to, we'll address at the end with an interactive Q&A. So I'm happy to welcome today's guest, Brian Judson. I've known him for almost a decade now, and he is a senior business broker at Best Business Brokers, and he's been in the industry for about 15 years now. And you've probably seen him around town at the many business events, and he's always serving in the community. He's very active on boards and fundraisers here in Savannah. And so we're so happy to have him here at Lunchtime Topics to kind of give back and share what he knows. So you guys can learn more about what he does and if he can help you out. And without further ado, welcome, Brian. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you setting this up. Really appreciate everything Creative Coast does for our community. You're definitely an incubation and resource space and do a lot to support all facets of Savannah business. So thank you very much. I'm going to start with a disclaimer, just because I go to a lot of presentations by accountants and attorneys, and that's what they do. And so my first disclaimer is I am not an accountant and I am not an attorney. And one nugget you can take away right now is I strongly recommend business owners have a good accountant and a good attorney. And throughout my process, I'm always referring to them. The second disclaimer is I love what I do. So if I get a little carried away and enthusiastic, it's not a show. I really, really do enjoy the day-to-day experience of what I do, the people I get to meet and the people I get to work with. So.
Well, awesome. We're so glad to have you here. And I want to learn a little bit more about your background. I always start with this question because it gives people a sense of how you kind of got your start and your area of expertise. Can you talk a little bit more about your field and what you've been doing in it and how long you've been working in it?
Sure. Well, it's a rather non-linear progression. I came from a completely unrelated field. I was at the University of California and about to take my law boards when I had a chance to manage the local Mercedes-Benz dealership because I have an idiot savant ability to memorize numbers. So never finished college, did 30 years of automotive parts and service manager. I have clean hands. I never worked on cars, but I built great service teams, and that was really gratifying. When we cashed out of California in 06 and chose Savannah as the ideal place to come live, I decided that because I had a three-year-old, I wanted to have complete flexibility in my world, my schedule. And I was getting recruited by Merrill Lynch at the time. I worked for Morgan Stanley. Actually, they made me a better offer. So I spent a year in the financial services, and it wasn't the best fit. And I didn't bring in $8 million in assets or whatever. But I stumbled on an ad for a business broker, and I didn't understand what that was or how it worked and got excited, and they recruited me, and I was with one firm and then got recruited by a competitor, Dean Burnett, over at B3 Business Brokers. And I think I'm coming up on 8 years with Dean, and it's been a great partnership, but it's satisfied all my goals. I am in complete schedule, charge of my schedule. Sometimes I make no money, sometimes I make nice money. So, but it's nice to get up every day and decide what you're going to do. And, you know, you acknowledged me for my community involvement. I was just looking at my calendar and can't take calls tomorrow or the next day because I mentor high school kids through the SLP program tomorrow morning. And then Friday morning, I'm taking part of the big, I think United Way sponsoring it. We're reading in. I'm going to be reading to three elementary school classes over at White Bluff Elementary School. So obviously I have a fun, charmed life.
So you kind of understand entrepreneur or business ownership yourself. At least you do get to make your schedule to a degree. I don't know that all business owners get to do that, but it is a perk of owning your own business, right? Right. So, okay, for those that are new to the startup world, And we're going to get into the nitty gritty of things like valuation and exit strategy and all that. But I want to start with this because if someone's tuning in for the first time, they had no idea that there was a business broker out there that could help them do this. Can you talk about and explain what your role is in the exit process?
Sure. And it's ironic because I run into business owners who don't know there's such a thing as business brokerage and they didn't know it was options. So one of the nice things about the state of Georgia, we're one of 13 states where people in my role are required to have real estate licenses. And I think it does a lot for the credibility and standardization of what my industry does, but it also helps define that role. So generally, I have an exclusive listing engagement with an owner and it's my charge to represent them. I think a more accurate description of what I do in the process is an intermediary. In fact, there's a lot of business brokerage firms that's the title they give their brokers because we truly are an intermediary. There's times where we feel like a ping pong ball going back and forth between buyer and seller. And as we go down the process, then it's buyer and seller and buyer's accountant and their attorney and the bank and everyone else. But I basically am the communicator in the middle of all that process.
So can you walk us through the process of utilizing your services from start to finish, So from the moment someone first approaches you to sell their business to the completion of the sale.
Sure. First thing I do every time I'm approached with a conversation is I send them my broker's confidentiality agreement. It truly is a cornerstone of what everyone in my industry values. We've got to keep secrets. You know, people can't know that businesses are for sale for a number of reasons. So that's my first step. My next step is really just getting to know more about the business. I'm fortunate that I get to pick and choose a little bit, and I like working with people I like to work with, but I also like to get excited about the business. So for me personally, one of the first steps is selling myself on what's there. The second step, we get into pricing. For disclosures, I don't use the word valuation because there are people who have credentials after their name and they get to do certified valuations. I'm in the real world of Main Street business brokering. We call them broker's opinion of value. But so the next step after I understand a little bit about what industry they're in, what their motivation is for selling, some of the intangible assets of their business, you know, reputation and tenured employees and all of those things, we dive into the financials. So I'll always request 3 years of tax returns, 3 years of P&Ls, and depending on the industry, some other updated statements, whether it be inventory reports or depreciation reports. But we dig into it. We try to figure out what the business owner is benefiting from owning that business. In fact, the term we use in business brokering is seller's discretionary earnings. So accountants will always refer to EBITDA. You know, if you're watching Shark Tank, things are always in terms of EBITDA. We go a little bit deeper in that. We look at an owner justifiably pays themselves a salary. They might be putting away money for their retirement through the company. They may pay their family's health benefits. All of those things, what is the net bottom line that business owner has been taking out of the business? From there, we do have national comparable databases where we can go in. A lot of it has to do with scale. A lot of it has to do with region. But if we've research a business and come up with an opinion of price, a lot of times that's based on national sales history at that point. So that's the start of the process. So from there, like I mentioned, we have a listing agreement. Just like if you were to sell your house, you'd have an exclusive agreement with an agent. That's the condition in which I always work with my clients. I get an exclusive listing agreement. I work for them. I'm their advocate, and we go to market. So our next step is to produce, and I've got great support on my team with a great marketing manager, but we produce a marketing piece, which is enticing without being revealing. We're so lucky in the Savannah market because we get attention from all over the country. But at the same time, we can't put a big flag up that your business is for sale or their business is for sale. So we describe the region, we describe the industry, we give them some numbers to look at. And then we run an ad campaign and it goes national on a number of websites. We have the Georgia Association of Business Broker website. As I mentioned, we've got a very effective marketing manager who's driving probably 50% of our inquiries are coming in from from our website. So that's step one. So people inquire and we get the full range. We get seniors in a business class who are just doing a research project. And when I see them inquire on six disparate businesses on the same weekend, I can tell something's up and they're doing a research project. But my job at that point really is to connect with that buyer and make sure they're a good fit for this business. I am more of a matchmaker than I am a negotiator. I like to see that the people inquired on that business because they're very interested or they have experience. There's a lot of people who inquire on businesses who have this myth about passive income and they think they can just buy something and sit back. We're very fortunate that we've got some great lenders in the area. So that's always a part of my process is finding out what the available funding is. And we can even start that process before there's buyers engaged, get a pre-approval or pre-review by some of the banks on the financials. But once I'm engaged with those buyers, I'm sure you can tell on the screen, I'm very old and I'm very strategically lazy. And I do not waste my time with people who have no business finding out what my client's business is or digging into their finances or anything else. So I'm looking both for the qualifications of finance, the qualifications for experience and really related experience to that business. From there, there's usually a meet and greet, an operational question sessions where a buyer comes in, learns a little more about the business, sort of a test drive to a lot of brick and mortar businesses. It's essential to get them in and walk through and let them visualize what the setup is. At that point, if that buyer is interested enough, they make an offer. Again, I'm the intermediary. I go back and forth until everyone's happy with the deal. In fact, I think you've got a great question later on about deal structure that they'll help elaborate on that. But again, my legal duty is to represent my client, get them the best deal possible. Once everyone's agreed to the terms, then pretty much I flip over to the other side and do everything I can to help the buyer. I connect them with lending sources, resources. I coach them more about the business and how to approach the employees. I'll interject a point right there. One of my litmus tests for taking on a client is A, they have to care about what happens to their business afterwards. I don't have any business clients who are just looking to take the money and run. They've built something, they're proud of it, and they want to see it continue. And primarily, the first thing they'll tell me is, I'm really concerned about my employees. I don't want to sell this to someone who's going to come in and change the culture or private equity firm that's going to piece it out. So those are things I listen for in talking to clients. And actually, that comes up almost 100% of the time. But again, going back to the buyer, I want to hear that from them too, that they are respectful of what the business seller has built. They obviously are going to have their own ideas. They're going to make their own changes, but we're looking for a good fit. We're looking for somebody who will come in and take over a business and prosper with it. But as far as the steps, it can be right down to the finish line. I do everything, preparing documents and get it all to an attorney, because just like real estate in Georgia, we close these transactions in an attorney's office. We make sure everyone gets their funds and everyone signed the agreements that they agreed to. So those are the steps.
So I'm going to jump questions just a little bit, because you brought up valuation. And I think that's a top of people's mind. Like, what is my company worth? And you said you called it, was it a broker's opinion of value? Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So can you talk about valuation or broker's opinion of value, whichever you feel more relevant, and what factors go into determining the value of a business?
Sure. Generally, it's just based on profitability. If the business is not making money, it's hard to assign a value to it. And you talk about multiples frequently. And unfortunately, too many people watch Shark Tank and they hear these 10 and 20 time multiples. And that's not the real world. Part of the valuation, and I will say this not sarcastically, but honestly, your business is worth exactly what we get someone to give you for it, not, do a hypothetical research project on it or say, oh, geez, I wish I'd known it was for sale. I would have given you this. It's really a rubber hits the road situation. So you know, and again, my job is to project my client's business in the most favorable light. But in terms of the elements of evaluation, it comes down to those tax returns, and it comes down to the P&Ls, and it comes down to clear accounting.
Okay, so going back to what I was going to ask before, we often talk about the importance of having an exit strategy here at the Creative Coast, an exit strategy when starting a business. So I think that we get so caught up in the excitement of like what we're going to launch that we don't even think about like, how do I want to handle me leaving the company? What happens if something happens to me? That kind of thing. You know, can you talk about why having an exit strategy is so important at the start of launching a business?
Well, the people who are lucky enough to be getting your advice are in the minority, because I don't get a lot of people who have thought about it from the start. I mean, you know, if you look at the purpose of why you're building up a business, it may be just income, or it may be a mission that you've taken on. But yeah, at some point, you're either going to get burned out on it, or you're going to need to retire. And the idea is to get you some maximum return on what you've created over those years. To be candid, I don't see a lot of people start thinking about it from the very beginning. I think the one talk I did at SCORE, my one graphic was a finish line, and it was all startup people, but I just kept pointing to the finish line and trying to get people to understand that there is some point at which you're going to probably want to exit the business.
So how often, and I'm jumping around a little bit, but I wanted to make sure I address that because it was so important. I want to go back to, valuation or revaluation or, what did you say? It was broker's opinion of value. How often should a business, get a valuation or revaluation? How often should it take place for someone that knows they're going to eventually sell their business? I was reading somewhere like once a year, you should do it.
Well, you should be having a once a year session with your accountant in which you understand their role and the significance of their role. You know, generally, if you don't tell your accountant otherwise, they're going to perceive their job as making sure you pay as little in taxes as you can. The reality is, starting probably 3 years before you plan to exit, you need to tell your accountant that you plan to sell the business. You need to stop hiding, you know, your miscellaneous shopping trips under miscellaneous expenses, and you need to do an accurate portrayal of what the business is really putting forth. Banks are wonderful resources. They're also myopic. They see what's on the first page of a tax return, and they don't look much beyond that. So in terms of a frequency, I don't know that it's necessarily something you need to do with a certain frequency. I wish I could talk to every business owner 3 years before they plan to exit, because that would be ideal, because then they would have 3 years of tax returns, 3 years of P&Ls that paint the picture of you know, in the brightest light to present it to a buyer. You know, it's the other thing in terms of valuation. When I go back to that facetious, your business is worth someone what someone gives you for it. You've always got to look at it through a buyer's eyes. I mean, you can have whatever opinion of your company and its value and whatnot, but if you look at the actual cash flow and you look at what a buyer is going to have to put down or borrow, it has to make sense. They have to be able to service their debt. They have to be able to pay themselves a living wage out of it and have some money to grow the business. So it ends up being much less theoretical and much more practical.
Okay. Can you talk about deal structure and the different scenarios a business owner should consider when selling?
Absolutely. I frequently will say there's more to a deal than the price, because that's true. And again, at this point in the process, I'm encouraging my clients to have a talk with their tax accountant, not only on how their taxes are presenting, but what's going to happen. If I get you this $1 million for your business and you receive it all at once, what's the tax strategy? What works to your best advantage? It's interesting. I track my LinkedIn requests, and number one is SBA lenders. Number two are drip marketers. And number three are tax mitigation strategists. So there are strategies out there where a buyer can either invest in certain funds to defer some of the capital gains, or what frequently works if the buyer, the seller is in a position, is carry some owner financing. It gives them a little residual income at a decent rate, but at the same time, it also means they're not getting one lump sum to pay taxes on in any given year.
Okay. So you kind of talked about this before and touched on it just then. In terms of bookkeeping and finances, what are steps a business owner should take to make sure everything is in order financially before selling their business? I mean, especially if they don't have that 3-year runway that you talked about, what are things that they need to look out for? And I think not only preparing to sell, but also I'm sure they have to keep their finances in order during the selling process too, right?
Sure. I mean, and during the process, I always advise my clients to continue running the business as if it's not for sale. You know, if they had a staffing decision or an equipment decision to make, make it as though you were just moving the business forward and it's going to end up having the best result. And a lot of it goes back to, like you said, from the very start, make sure you understand QuickBooks, make sure you understand what's going into your accounting system. You don't have to be the expert, but you need to be sure that between you and your accountant, that things are being accurately presented. In terms of some other subtle factors, if you're in a business that carries any kind of accounts, you know, how up to date are your accounts receivable? Are you collecting the money in a timely manner? Are there things you're going to end up having to write off? And if so, go ahead and write them off, you know, kind of clean the books, clean house as best you can.
So we're getting some questions from the audience. I'm going to ask one more and then I'm going to delve into some because one coming up is pretty kind of relevant to what we're talking about. Okay. So I've heard that business exits can take anywhere from several months to over a year. And just what I've heard, but what is the average timeline for selling a business and what factors go into making the transaction as smooth and maybe even as fast as possible?
Okay. If I had to average, it's unquantifiable because there are businesses that don't sell. They either have unreasonable expectations or they're failing or they're in such a niche industry, we just cannot find the person who's interested in them. In terms of, you know, saleable businesses, average is probably somewhere between 8 months and a year. My longest was 2.5 years, but again, it was a situation of finding the right buyer. It was a large enough manufacturing company that they were attracting private equity firms. And the seller had told me from day one, he goes, I have, you know, this is part of Savannah community. I have people buying houses and sending their kids to private schools and participating. He says, I really can't afford this company to get bought by a private equity firm. So for 2 years, I told private equity firms, I wouldn't even tell them who it was when they signed the NDA, and we finally found the right buyer and made the right transition. What was the last half of that question? And then we can go to the inquiry you got online.
I said, what is the average timeline for selling a business? And what factors go into making the transaction as smooth and maybe as fast as possible?
Sure. Again, a lot of times I will take financials to a bank or to the SBAC and start a pre-review process. That often expedites things considerably. There's a stage in the process about midway in negotiations called due diligence. Someone has made an offer, they put up some earnest money. They've now requested certain documents. And if they're satisfied with them, then they release due diligence and we move forward towards the closing. If they're not satisfied with them, they can get their earnest money back and go away. So I guess the number one is be prepared to produce all your accounting, you know, get your accountant on board, let them know that there's a process. Hey, I'm going to be asked for certain things. It may be more detailed than we're used to presenting or reviewing on a regular basis, but just be prepared to expedite the answers to those requests.
So kind of related to that, we have a question from the audience. They want to know, what are the top issues in business valuation and business sale preparation? So what are some common things that you've seen pop up that's maybe slow things down? Or maybe we can divide that into two questions, actually. So we talk about what are top issues with business valuation and what are top issues with business sale preparation?
Sure, that really helps me frame a point I'd hoped to make earlier. But you know, one of the key factors in how saleable a business is how transferable it is. If your business is named after you and you're the one greeting every customer and you're producing a significant amount of the productive labor in your company, it makes it tough to sell. You know, the business is perceived as being you and not an organization. When I got to a point in the automotive where we had grown some very, very successful independent shops, I ended up training and consulting. And that's one of the things we'd say. We'd go into Kate's shop and say, Kate, you're, you know, outstanding mechanic. You've built a great reputation, but you might want to consider renaming this State Street Garage and not Kate Lance Automotive, just for perception. You might not want to greet every single customer who comes in the door. You might want to hire good people to be your customer front, because again, you know, if the perception is you are the business, it makes it very, very hard to sell. Beyond that, there's, you know, real rudimentary things. What does your business look like? Is there crap all over the floor? I mean, I run the gamut. I saw somewhere somebody said, what industries do you focus on? I'm a generalist. I, you know, everything from background check and IT to liquor stores and restaurants and a lot of service businesses. But you really need to put on that fresh set of eyes and walk through your business and make sure it looks decent. You know, beyond that, there's a lot of basics that go back to operating a good business. I would say have job descriptions in place. I would say have operations manuals in place. Last thing a new owner wants to do is show up and have the power go out and have no idea who your contractor's been, who your power company is. So just a basic idiot's guide to running your business is not a bad thing to have on hand.
Yeah. And thanks for touching on the industry question. So you're saying too, you've worked with all kinds of industries. Can you name, you mentioned a few, but can you name some of them from on a spectrum? Like, what's one crazy thing you've done versus another? Or one?
Sure. Well, you know, going back to my point on transferability, I used to have a story. I would set it, you know, I would say, look, if you have a manufacturing business and you're on your boat in the Caribbean managing it from your iPad, that gets a higher multiple. That's a really strong business. That means somebody with enough capital to buy it can kind of replicate what you're doing. On the other hand, I always used to say I can't sell a psychotherapy practice because nobody wants to roll in next Tuesday and see somebody else sitting in that chair next to the couch. Ironically, I could just sell a large mental health practice, but that's kind of the range I've done. Many concentrations, I've now sold 4 dry cleaners in town. I think I'm working on my 3rd or 4th liquor store. But a lot of service industries, even with my automotive background, I haven't done that much with automotive shops, but worked some transmission shops and auto parts stores. I think on the extreme, I always love when I learn about new things. I sold a background check company that had a focus on only the nuclear industry. They were in a little town in middle Georgia. These women had been in the industry working for bigger employers. They'd started this little firm. They had 6 people in it and they were outstandingly profitable. And I just, you know, I knew there were background check companies and usually they're part of an employment agency or staffing agency, but they had really carved out this niche. And it was one of the times I missed very, 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 very badly on the opinion of price. We priced it at X and the interest in the business was incredibly overwhelming. Within 96 hours, I had 12 signed non-disclosures and a bidding war, and it ended up selling for well over $100,000 more than I told them it would. So even though I was wrong, I still came out looking like a hero.
So can we talk, I want to talk a little bit more specific about you too, because we're getting some questions about you. So, someone asked, not questions, but less about general of selling a business and more. Sure. So like, someone asked, can Brian represent clients outside of Georgia and with potential buyers outside of Georgia, maybe, and even USA? He mentioned the real estate license. So this led to my question.
Sure. Yeah, we are also licensed in South Carolina. I think we have a pretty easy reciprocal relationship in Tennessee. Florida is a very difficult state to get reciprocity. If I get a potential client in Florida, as I have, I find a broker in Florida and I refer them to them. So that would be the licensure. My personal, you know, area, I'm lazy. I don't want to drive more than about two and a half hours. I've got a potential listing in Warner Robins. It's a pretty good sized company. I'm excited about going there. I've gone up to Hilton Head. As far as the buyers, they come from all over. I've had some of my more attractive listings actually log inquiries from as many as 20 or 30 states. What we see in Savannah, and it's you know, part of the wonders of the Savannah story, is that a good percentage of them have always come from the Northeast. And when COVID hit, you know, the whole Rust Belt really shook the tree, and you know, more than half the inquiries I was getting were from people who wanted to get out of the Northeast, who had some experience, who had some capital, and they were like, Savannah, sounds great, we're coming. So, you know, as far as regional, we get buyers from all over, but as far as licensure, I'm licensed in Georgia and South Carolina, and the last time we had something come up in Tennessee, it wasn't a big deal, so.
Okay. All right. So you touched on this earlier, but someone also asked, does your business brokerage help buyers in financing the deal? If so, how? I think you mentioned the SBA earlier. Can you, and banks, can you talk about that?
Sure. And again, I, you know, I represent sellers, but I am the resource for buyers. So yeah, I, you know, you can't see in this picture, but I have a ginormous belly, and it's all the result of bankers taking me out to lunch and asking me what deals I have working. So I definitely have the contacts in the banking world. And more important than just contacts is some sense of what banks have an appetite for this or that, and what banks like working in certain sectors of it. So yeah, absolutely. I help people with financing questions.
Okay. So coming towards the end of my questions here, but we're going to wrap up in a minute, and we're going to leave some time for more Q&A so people can come off mute. But let's end on these couple things. So say someone makes the decision, okay, this is the year I'm going to start the process of selling my business. What is the first thing that they should focus on today?
First thing they should focus on today is that conversation with their accountant. Making sure that it's an accurate portrayal of the business, a favorable portrayal of the business, and then start on the housekeeping things, making sure there's job descriptions in place, understanding the structure of their business, and really taking that fresh look for themselves, or what are the features here that's going to be attractive to someone. If this is the year they want to sell their business, they also need to tell themselves it may not happen this year. Depending on what condition I find their books in, there's a lot of clients I've said, come back to me in 2 years, give me 2 years of cleaner accounting, and we can do something with this. But right now, you're not going to get the value you deserve out of your company.
So we've talked about a lot of different things today. Are there any other pieces of advice that you would offer that we didn't touch on?
No, not really. You know, a lot of it has to do with realistic expectations. And I, you touched on buyers and working with buyers. I'm flooded with buyers. I get five emails a week from spreadsheet jockeys up on Wall Street who have their, you know, $5 million to invest, and they're looking for something, and they're all industry agnostic. And it's like, how can I find you something if you can't tell me what it is you really want to work in? So obviously my most successful sales is when a buyer has said to me, look, I know there's a lot to negotiate here, but I want this business. I'm focused on this business. And, you know, so for buyers, my piece of advice would be to really define what it is you want. And if it's only about return on the dollar, then we may have trouble helping you, because, you know, I have no idea what you see yourself doing 2 years from now to keep busy.
Okay. So great advice. Thank you for answering all these questions today and being here. Again, we're going to head into Q&A in a second, but I want to leave with this. Where can people go online to connect with you?
Sure. B3 Brokers has our website. It's B as in Bravo, 3 as in the numeral, and brokers plural, because there are more than one of us. So it's www.b3brokers.com. We're also, like I said, members of the Georgia Association of Business Brokers. So if they're looking for businesses for sale, might be a place to poke around. But in terms of reaching my firm, that'd be the easiest.
Okay. Awesome. I popped that, your website, your company website, into the chat there. So if anybody needs it, it's there. Anybody want to come off mute and ask some questions or pop something into the chat that we didn't get to?
I already told Ashton I wouldn't answer any of his questions. So.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, if you tuned in later on, there's going to be a recording that's going on the website, and you can catch it there later. It should be up within the week, and it'll be posted to our newsletter either next week or the week after. But Brian, thanks for coming on today to chat with us. And I'm trying to think if there's anything that we didn't touch on. Oh, I had one question actually. Sure. I knew it was a tip of. Okay, you said was it EDBA?
EBITDA is an accounting term for earnings before interest, taxes, and depreciation and amortization. So it's a basic accounting term that looks at the raw profitability of a business.